that.
Guys like Jim Ward, did you ever know him?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I worked for the movies. He was came, I think,
he came
towards the end of my tour, I think.
He came in early 67.
Yeah, well, I was gone by that time.
Did you know him from elsewhere?
I met him after.
No, okay. I interviewed him down at his home in Florida. He was real nice to me.
But now these, like I say, these guys, a lot of young ones in each individual province. But they got a lot of guys. Because you'd have a regional guy, we had maybe five guys working under them.
I heard
you had plenty of time to spend with all of them.
Okay, so that's one of the things then that the region guy was do is work with his young province officers.
He was responsible for all of them. He had to run he had to make sure that they were doing what they were supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And he would travel. They were supposed to once a week hit every province in their region.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, they would do it one day. They hit all the places and sit and talk. And of course, they would communicate back and forth, talk on the side band and send messages, combo messages back and forth. And if there's any real problem, the guy would leave his province and come down to the regional capital and the regional headquarters and talk to him. And then, of course, they were getting guidance and stuff from down in Saigon, from Tucker and his staff.
The Saigon people. Okay. And then they have the special experts, like guys like Ralph Johnson, who had just been around since the beginning and didn't belong to anybody, but just were kind of like floating mm-hmm. around, giving advice where they were needed.
Yep.
Okay. Because guys like Ralph Johnson and Evan Parker had their first assignments to Vietnam in 52, 53, 54.
Which Parker?
Evan Parker. Did you ever hear him?
Colonel Parker.
Yeah. Everybody called him.
Panama hat.
Yeah, everybody called him because he was reserve.
Yeah.
Okay, but he just walked around.
He was there. He'd been around forever.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he's the first director of the Phoenix program.
Wow.
Yeah.
Couldn't have been.
Sure.
Not saying Parker can't be.
About 6'1". Real nice, easy going, just a really kind of like a beautiful guy.
Not the same Parker I'm talking
okay.
about. This guy's not 5'9", old guy.
Oh, not this, no. This guy's a whole different story.
No, different Parker.
Okay.
But,
maybe he really was military then, Colonel Parker.
Probably was. Well, this Colonel I'm talking about was, he was in the First World War, for Christ's sake.
Okay.
And the Second World War. I don't think he fought in the Korean War. He was too old for that, but
okay.
He'd been around forever.
But he was an agency guy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And he'd pop out every once in a while. You'd see him and walking down the street. You didn't know what hell he was there for or why. But there was always a number of guys around, and then they were always being visited by
somebody from Washington or something like that.
Christ, one time we had more ex-chiefs of station working in that place than I've ever seen in my life. I mean, a lot of brass was there. It's a place to be. Like if you were in the military, you wouldn't be able to go to Vietnam, go where the war was. But they were, these kids I called the hell around, I say they were all at night.
So what were they supposed to do with the pick? And did you give, was part of your training the guy what he's supposed to do? Did you go and you say to the region guy, you say, listen, I'm coming in and because we got to do, you want me to do this pick in, all right, let's say Tay Ninh, okay? So, and let's say that the guy there is one of these young guys that came out in 64. Do you then instruct him on what to do with the pick, the problems?
Sort of. We had, they knew we had to collect intelligence. They had their list of what was needed for their own province.
And the agency, I suppose, had already trained them in interrogation.
They weren't trained in interrogation. They didn't have to know. All they had to do was be able to make sure that whoever it was that they had that was running the thing would follow their orders. When they said, look, this is the requirements I want, they had to review. They had to read all the damn the initial reports on these guys,
okay,
and then go back and give them requirements. just like we did at the Nick.
So every pick also has then a translator or a team of translators.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, all have to be translated, okay. And typists, and that's a whole other.
So the translators.
That they all right work here. Over here on this side. It was all okay. Editorial. Our group of translators and everything, and
okay.
Typists and so everything without Vietnamese was put out in English.
Okay.
Too. Okay. All to be translated.
Did they have those safes? Graph. You know, safes for locking everything up. That.
Oh yeah, they had those file cabinet safes that were we all went to. Not to get into, but that was the name of the brand. I can't remember. But that, yeah, they had them, and they had file cabinets with little push lock things in them.
Mm-hmm.
They usually, I think they just used the file cabinets. I don't think they worried too much about safes. They probably had one safe in each pick, and that's where they probably kept some of the handguns and not much else in there. The real valuable stuff, you know, a couple of bottles of booze and whatever. Stuff that you didn't want to lose. Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
That the medical staff could come and get when they needed it. If it wasn't needed to be refrigerated, no.
Okay.
But for the most part.
So they got electricity in these places? They got a generator?
That's true. Hey. You couldn't get a car to stay out there at night if they didn't have electricity. My God, you had to have spotlights shooting out all around. We had to clear the areas around it.
So is this where the spotlight is, or is this?
Well, you had them on the corners, and you had them up here. You had a big one, and you had them along to the walls. So,
okay.
In other words, so this guy sitting here could see everything this direction and this direction, each one of them,
okay.
And you'd clear the area around it. So that you didn't have trees growing right up to there. These guys would be able to sneak right up on you. So you have to clear, have an open area where anybody coming at you would have to cross the open area and you'd see them. It would all be illuminated.
Did you have barbed wire or anything?
Not usually, but I guess a couple of places might have. They were really a little bit far out from the center of town.
Okay.
They might have needed that, but I don't think so, basically. I mean, you.
But they use agent oil.
This was a self-contained place. I mean,
all right. So there's defoliated in here, right?
Yeah, well, we didn't go around.
You didn't have those little
drop an Agent Orange.
They had those later on. They had these little spray cans with Agent Orange.
We just went around and
pulled. This is later on, and one guy was telling me that they used to spray each other with this stuff. You know, it's just.
Well, some of them were actually, you know, not too far from, you know, just on the outskirts of town.
So, okay.
Not too far from homes.
So it's a suburban kind of area.
Yeah, but not too close to the residential areas because you didn't want to endanger the people living there. You didn't want them coming around and hanging around the place.
Rubbernecking.
But we just take a bulldozer and go around and knock everything down.
Where's the generator then? Because I suppose all the electricity is self-generated?
Self-generated, yeah. The generator was inside the compound. Be somewhere in here, I don't know.
And along
could be right underneath the water tower or whatever.
Okay.
Or up in the corner.
Okay.
Is that some of them, they had electricity from the town, but with a backup generator.
Okay.
I mean, they were close enough into town so they could just run the wires right out to it.
Okay.
But you had to. I mean, you couldn't have this thing all completely dark at night. Nobody would be staying there. Not even the prisoners would be safe.
I'm picturing all these guys with little candles. Okay.
No, they all had electricity and light bulbs and everything inside.
Okay.
All the comforts at home.
They got toilets in the cells or just a pot?
Just a hole.
Okay.
Shit, they didn't have them in their homes. Why should we put them in the cells?
Yeah, you tend to forget that you're talking about Asiatic cultures and lack of indoor plumbing and stuff like that. I mean, after a while, you start thinking, if you haven't been there, you know, and you're just talking about it, that it's, you know,
you mean,
just like
home. I got a toilet for these guys?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? They didn't have any in the whole town. Why should we build them in a goddamn interrogation center?
Okay.
Yeah, they slept on, there was a concrete slab, and then you'd give them a straw mat or something, and depending on how cooperative they were, they could get extra things like, you know, a blanket maybe, not that they needed one. Because they could get chilly inside there in the highland area, it got very cold at night. And so, there were things you could give them and things you could take away from them, according to how they cooperated in the interrogation. Not a whole lot, but, you know, whatever little bit they got, they were grateful for.
Okay.
But as far as you asked me about training, we had to train the actual guys in the department. No,
yeah, you have a team of guys. You have, there's you, there's the captain, and then there's the two EMs. Now, do you have a counterpart Vietnamese team? And so that, you know, like these, a permanent team of Vietnamese trainers who go around with you from province to province?
No, no, but they, now the captain, his main thing was training, he trained the guard force in each place.
Okay.
He put them through their drills. Two EMs worked with, one would work with the interrogators, one would work with the report writers.
Okay.
Tell them the kind of reports, you know, so this is the first report you do, this is the second report you do.
Okay.
And then, 1, 2, 3, 4, these are the next reports you do, according to whatever.
Okay.
And they show them, they give them a sample of it, and explain to them how it should be written, you know, and this is what you, how you ask, how you go about interrogating a man. Well, the guy working with the interrogators work all that. The other guy would work with them on, these are the kind of reports you got to do, and he worked with the report writers. They were going to do the work, get it from the, getting the notes from the interrogator, and would actually write the reports for them.
Okay.
And,
Because, all right, so these guys, the interrogator then trains the guys how to take notes.
Yep.
The interrogation, okay.
And how to, you know, you just don't sit down and have 10 questions and ask them 10 questions, get 10 answers and walk away.
Yeah.
Because lots of times the answer to one question should lead you to another hour of talking. You never get to question three because question two is so interesting, it's giving you so much.
That's,
keep on going.
That's what happens to me. I mean, talking with people all the time. I go in with a list of questions and you know, I can't just stick to that list. You know, be flexible. Be
able to go down the avenue. If you have questions and you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the first one is, were you ever trained in North Vietnam? Yes. Second question, where were you trained? And you know, or the second question is, were you ever trained by other than the Vietnamese?
Mm-hmm.
The guy says yes, and the third question is, when did you come to South Vietnam? And the guy tells you, and you go over there and you ask all 10 questions, and he says, fine, that's it. And that's the end of your interrogation.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when did, you know, you were trained in North Vietnam? Yeah. When were you trained? Where were you trained? What were you trained in? You know, 60 questions you could ask.
Yeah.
And a lot, you know, some of these guys, if you gave them 10 questions, they would get 10 answers for you, and that's it.
That's it.
They would not go one step further. Then you have to send them back. Say, all right, now I go back and ask them, you give them 10 more questions on this one and 10 more on this one.
Yeah.
But, and that's what a lot of them have to learn, is that you don't just drop it just because you got the answer. The answer should, if it's the right answer, should lead you on to a bunch of more questions.
Okay.
And then, so we go through the whole thing with them. They would, and then we'd bring up, we had one of the medics would come up. When we got the medical staff together, permanent staff, which would usually be some nurse, and a male and a female nurse, and maybe a medic or a doctor, Vietnamese. Then our medic would come up and go over stuff with them, and give them the medicine and, you know, ask them questions. Basically, he would be asking questions more than, I guess, than actually telling them anything, just to make sure they knew what the hell they were, you know, what it was all about.
Was there an American medic that would train the staff?
Yeah, we would have an American medic.
You get him from one of the local forces, or did he come up from Saigon?
No, he came up from Saigon.
Okay.
One of our guys would come up, and he would...
Because he could do the standard thing in each province.
Okay. Sure. And he would, like I say, he would be more asking questions than he would be telling.
What do you know?
Just to make sure that these guys said, he walked away and said, look, these guys, they know it.
Yeah.
Don't worry about them. They understand what they're supposed to do, and they know their job.
Okay.
And we say, okay, we're all set. We know the medical staff is okay.
Any segregation of male and female
prisoners? Not other than that, you know, everybody was in one cell by themselves.
Not like a women's side.
No.
The men's dorm and the women's dorm.
No, we didn't have women's, no, men's dorm. Just started building up the cells as we could and keep them far apart as we could until we had to put them next to each other.
Okay.
We didn't.
You got any interesting stories about?
About what?
You know, about the picks, or related subjects. Something that gave me insights into what was, you know, going on there, from your point of view. What do you talk about when you sit around with Lou Conin?
We don't talk about the picks. That's the
don't talk about Vietnam.
We talk about Vietnam. Hey, we did a lot of things in Vietnam that had nothing to do with the war. We had olive races and...
Had what?
Olive races.
Olive races.
And we had...
You got it. You can't let that one go by. What's the olive rinse?
I take an olive and put them in a glass of beer.
Mm-hmm.
You got a glass and I got a glass. I put drop the olive in. Mm-hmm. And it'll drop to the bottom of the glass.
Mm-hmm.
It'll sit there for a short time, and then it will start rising to the top of the glass. At what point it will sit at the top of the glass for a while, then it will start sinking to the bottom of the glass again. Then it'll go up and down for a while. If you've got a good olive, it can keep doing this for 20 minutes. If you've got a bad olive, it may just drop to the bottom and stay there, never move again. And so you bet on how many loops olive would go up and down to the glass so much time. Mm. Yes, that was... We used to watch the turnaround down at the Cirque Nautique, and the boats would come in up the river to dock at Saigon and unload. They would have to be turned around out in the middle of the river, and so they would drop their anchor, and once the anchor was settled, then the tugs would push them, turn them around, and then they would raise the anchor and continue on. And the thing was, you would bet on how long it would take from when the anchor hit the water until it would clear the water after the turnaround. And you would bet on that, and whoever was closest to the number of minutes it took would win the money. I mean, it's some of the exciting things we did when we were having our, what we call sick call, every morning at 10 o'clock. If you were in Saigon, you went to Cinco. Had a few beers, get your eyes open. And nothing else to do while you were sitting there. If the boat came up, it was great. It added to the excitement. You could bet on the turnaround. Or race the olives. That was just when you were, that was in playtime, not work time. But you talked about you made up songs. And made up football teams. The first annual spring of ball. I got all sorts of stupid things like you do, sitting around a bar, you're bored.
Yeah,
you're not doing
What was that? What was that little song about Muldoon that you recited to me earlier, the other night there? You got your Brigadoon and your Lornadoon.
That had nothing to do with over there. That's
just something else.
One of the coaches at St. John's came up and used to say all the time, he said, there are Lornadoons, there's Brigadoons, and there's Sand Dunes, but there's no dune like a mole dune. A guy named Lou Clark, he was a coach at St. John's.
How'd the team do last night anyway? How'd you guys do last night?
Last night we won by 21, 61 to 40.
Must have been falling asleep.
No, our guys, for some reason, tried to keep the game close until late in the fourth quarter. Played a team that we should have beat by 100 points, but they had just had a big game against the Matto on Sunday, which is one of the top teams always, every year, in the country. We beat them by 2 points in the last second of the game. So they had a little bit of a letdown, so we played, hot and cold. But
did you play ball in school? I guess you must have been.
Not basketball, but football.
Football.
Yeah, you were asking about the pick. I don't know if there's any. I can't think of anything.
Yeah, is there anything that you would want to say? You know, I mean, there's things.
Well, a lot of people have different ideas about the value of the picks. So I tell you, talk to a few people. Some of my very good friends think they were the biggest waste of money and time ever spent because they didn't produce anything, and a lot of them didn't. A lot of them.
Well, who's somebody that thinks it was a waste? For what reasons?
Well,
from what perspective? Does it inside?
Well, there's one guy, and he turned that machine off a second. I'll tell you what his name is. There were a lot of people did not think they were any good, and there was a lot of them that weren't, because the guys in the province didn't push them, didn't try to make them work.
Okay.
And some of the people say, oh, baloney, it's not that we didn't try, it's just that they weren't, it was a dumb idea in the first place, and it couldn't have worked. And a lot of them said it was a stupid idea because we couldn't get the military to turn over. They were the ones capturing the prisoners.
Yeah, right.
They weren't going to turn them over to us until they were finished with them. By the time we got them, they were pretty much washed out. So, but see, this was part of the overall plan of the PICC. It was to get them in. Sure, the military get their tactical military intelligence first. That, obviously, that's the most important thing going.
Yeah, are they going to hit a town over there? Are they going to hit a battalion over there?
You have to have that information, but then we felt that you could work your priorities after that. After the military had really gotten what they felt they could get out of them, that they could use today, tomorrow, next week, then they should be able to sit them down and say, okay, now let's see whose priorities this guy. Maybe the Navy should talk to him first. Maybe the CIA should talk to him, you know, but this is the way you should, you know, break it down. But certainly the first thing that should have been done would be getting tactical military intelligence guy out. And that was the whole idea of having the PICCs and the PICs being part of them, so we'd be able to use all this and work back and forth. But it never came to that.
So
and that's why a lot of people thought they were no good, because the original idea of it was never, did never materialize.
So, somebody coming in?
Yes, sir.
So, is Barlow the guy who's pushing the PICCs at first?
Sure he was. Tucker was too. I mean, okay. Tucker agreed that that was a good idea.
Yeah.
Everybody agreed it was a good idea because it worked in Malaysia.
In Malaysia, right. Did you ever meet that guy, Sir Robert Thompson? Was he, you know, Jerry?
No, I never did. I heard an awful lot about him from a lot of people, including the guy I worked with in Thailand, who was also British and worked in Malaysia. And no, I didn't meet him, but he was the expert's expert.
Yeah.
And I guess Barlow worked with him and this other guy. But
who worked with him?
Barlow.
Yeah. Okay.
But the concept was bought. Okay.
Yeah.
That this is the way it would be great to work. It was bought by us. It was bought by the embassy. It was bought by the military. And they were the ones that you needed in on it, because they were the ones that had control of the prisons initially.
Yeah.
And the Vietnamese were not going to do a damn thing that the military, the Vietnamese military were not going to do a damn thing that the U.S. military didn't approve of.
Yeah.
So the U.S. military said, don't you dare turn those prisoners over to these guys.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, no way we're going to get them. And now in some provinces, our guys went out of their way to work up a good relationship with some of the guys, some of the military type.
Yeah.
They were able to get some.
Okay.
You know,
so it's a
fairly quickly after they were caught.
As you know. Just about everything is true with everything else, it comes down to the personalities, whether the people get along.
And our guy in the province had to sell it to the military that, look, if you turn these guys over to us early, we will be able to give you intelligence that you will be happy to get.
Yeah.
We've got trained guys that can do a better job than what you've got.
Yep. And also,
they have to convince them of that.
Eventually, the military realizes the value to them of learning about the infrastructure. That's what eventually,
sure.
But in the beginning, they don't.
But also, you can tell them, we'll be able to take up. You give us your requirements, we'll ask the questions for you, along with our own. But you had to convince them, and you had to show them. And if you couldn't convince them that there was a chance, they'd never give you the chance. If you never had the chance, you couldn't show them.
Okay.
And so in some areas, it worked. Whereas we were able to, our guy was able to convince the military guy that, look, give us a shot at it anyway and see what happens. Turn a couple of business over to us shortly after you get them and see what we can come up with for you.
Yeah.
And if we fall on our face, we get it. What's it going to cost you? A couple of business.
Yeah.
And when they were able to convince them, in a couple of provinces they were, they were able to show them that, they could. And the guy started working.
Okay.
And then it worked in other provinces where we just had good relationships with the province chief or something like that. But in other areas, our guys said, I'm not going to spend my time on it. Kiss that guy's ass. I don't care less about him.
Yeah.
You know, I'd go to one and do my own thing. I didn't come here to run an interrogation program. I came here to run whatever the other operations you're supposed to run.
Conflicted interests.
So it wasn't a great smashing success that it could have been.
Okay.
At least not while I was there. But in certain provinces, it was doing very well.
Do you know if they continued to run them right up to 75?
I have no idea. I never found out.
Oh, and the guy who replaced this guy, Slater?
We built an interrogation center in Udorn, and we took over this building in
Udorn?
Bangkok.
Is that U-D-O-R-N?
U-D-O-R-N.
Yeah, okay. That's up north, right?
Northeast.
Yeah.
That's where the Air America base was, and
there's
an Air Force base there. That's got nothing to do with the Phoenix program.
No, but it's interesting. I mean, you know, one thing I learned about Vietnam, you can't just think about Vietnam and just look at Vietnam. You've got to think about Cambodia and Laos, too. You know,
Laos operations were the bars that run out of Udon.
Yeah.
That's why America was there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's an operation there that is interest to me. They call it Palace Dog.
The which?
Palace Dog. Project 404.
Never heard
Palace Dog. The Air Force operation.
But you're telling me now that the PICS was incorporated into the Phoenix program.
Oh, yeah. That was, yeah. There was the PICS on the one side, and then there was the Crew on the other side.
And we went out and brought them into the PICS.
That's right.
Like I said, the problems we had down in the Delta, they did it with the Hamlet and Bowman program and the CTs.
Yeah.
And we used another one of the programs we had going. We used, I think, four. We had the PICS was one in the Hamlet and the CT, but there was another one we used. And all in that same operation. And it showed that, you know, if you get the cooperation between the various people.
Yeah.
And in that case, the guy that was the PM guy, was a high school classmate of mine.
Yeah.
And a gung-ho type of one to go out and he wanted to cooperate, and he wanted to do all that. And then the other guy was a guy that was very serious about making everything in his province work, and he wanted to make his pick work. You know, he wasn't happy that he got stuck with it, because it just meant more work.
Yeah.
But he was the type of guy that was, he wanted it to be the best.
Yeah.
And when they got together and they worked and they did, and they showed that, and this one guy had great relations with the province chief and with all the military, and the other guy had great relationship with the special branch, the CIO, and they were able to make the thing work.
Do you remember what province that's in? That's the city, Fuckley, but what's the...
It was in Vinh Long. It was in the Delta, and it was in the, I think it was Canto, maybe. I had to look at a map. I can't remember if it was under Mito or...
Canto was the southernmost part. Canto is Fong Xin.
No, this was Vinh Long, I think, which was in Mito region.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it was.
Okay.
But if I looked at a map, and I could pick it up. But it did work, and they produced a lot of intelligence out of it, and they picked up a lot of VC that were responsible, and not guys that weren't necessarily VC, but were collaborating with them in the dam, in the villages, and cost them a lot of loyal Vietnamese lives and stuff. So. And I guess there was some decent intelligence from some of them. Again, I was so busy running around trying to get new ones started, I never had much time to find out what the ones that were in existence were actually doing.
Yeah.
Except when I would happen to be in the area and stop in and they'd tell me any problems they had. Or any new ideas they had of how they were going to change things around.
Yeah.
And,
so what'd you think of Brigham as a boss?
I like Nelson. I thought Nelson was a nice guy.
Yeah.
Good boss. You say, not many people did. But they, you know, a lot of the guys didn't like him, didn't even work with him. They worked on the other side for a long time. They just didn't like him for some reason. He wasn't a Tucker, for sure. And I think that's what a lot of them, they tried to compare him to Tucker Ugelman, who he replaced.
Yeah.
And it was not fair, because they were two different kind of guys.
Yeah.
And he was a little dogmatic, and maybe even... You wouldn't see him much come down the Cosmos, sit around and drink beer and race up with the guys, and that's what a few of them thought. There was something wrong with that. Which I said, why the hell should he? He doesn't have to. He said, drink with me.
Yeah.
But, he'd come in and have a few beers with me, and then maybe that was it, and then he got to leave.
Yeah.
You know, the rest of us stayed there and drink till the goddamn bar closed. But, you know, there's no reason why he should.
Yeah.
Just because they were doing it.
Yeah.
One guy told me one time, he said, how the hell could you like that guy? Goddamn. He said, I don't know. Why are we even sitting here drinking with you? Like I say, if I've got my friendship with you depends on whether I like him or not.
Yeah.
You know, my friendship with you isn't worth a damn as far as I'm concerned.
It's very nice to me. You invited me into his house and just very nice to me.
You don't have to like him. You know, the fact that I like him shouldn't have anything between you. My relationship with you.
Yeah.
I said, I probably like a lot of people you don't like, and you probably like some people I don't like, but what's that got to do with you and me? But no, I like Nelson. I thought he was a good man. I didn't think he was as talented as Tucker, but there were very few that were.
Yeah, well, Tucker Googleman sounds like really a larger-than-life kind of exceptional guy. You know?
Legend in his own time, he was. He was very unusual guy. You didn't meet many like him. I hadn't met anybody that knew him that didn't like him. And I guess there were. I'm sure there were, because I'm sure he made a lot of enemies because of the way he was. I mean, he grew up in upside down states. I got to them one time, and again, this young girl, Polish girl, that was there. Tucker was talking to her about something. He said, God damn it, I can't think of what her name is. He said, God damn it, what are we going to do with that no good cocksucking son of a bitch up there? We've got to do something. She said, I don't know what we're going to do with that no good cocksucking son of a bitch up there, Tucker. And all of a sudden he dumped on him. He was talking to him. He said, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. But, you know, his language was
legendary too, yeah.
Oh, God, yes. I mean, somebody told me once that the psychologist had said that he was psychologically unfit for duty in headquarters. But, you know, keep him in the field, that's where he should be. But I don't know. Don't put that in, because I don't know if it was true or not. Somebody said it. But he was a guy that, I tell you, he had legions, but would follow him anywhere he wanted to go. I tell you, there was not many people.
Yeah. Well, he must have gone, do you know the circumstances of when he went back in? You know, he must have gone in
he
by
went
himself.
Back to get his family out.
Yeah, but he went back in by himself, right? I mean, he didn't go back in with any other Americans, did he?
No. When he was there, the Saigon had not followed. He was there to get his family out.
Yeah.
Evidently, he had some problems. Another friend of mine said he stalked Tucker, told him, he said, we can get you out. And he said, I'll get my family, he's working on it or something. I stayed there and evacuation, everybody was gone, and he was still there.
Yeah.
And he was staying in a hotel there. And one day he came down to the hotel, a guy, evidently a Frenchman, was there and saw it. He cut off the elevator in the hotel, walked into the lobby, and they were waiting for him. And grabbed him, took him out, threw him in a car, and it was the last anybody saw him. He was seen in prison a couple of times.
By other prisoners.
And a French newspaper guy, I think, saw him and reported it after me. And then the North Vietnamese denied they had him. The government tried to get him released and said they didn't ever heard of him. And then finally they returned his body.
And did he once say to you that he didn't want to be taken prisoner?
We talked again about these the picks. And he said something about, John, shit, one day we may end up in these goddamn things if we get caught. And the thing is, if we lose this war, you know, we could end up in there. And what would you do if you were in? He said that he thought he'd kill himself if he was ever caught, rather than go through interrogation. But I'm sure he didn't. He was tough. I mean, the report I heard was that when the body got to Okinawa, to the Graves Division people, they said that broken bones that had not healed.
Yeah.
And so obviously he was being tortured right up until the time he died. I'd be willing to bet
that's
money that he never told them a damn thing that could have helped him. But he was just, I could see him spitting right in their face, but I didn't know the last. But
it's sad, but it's ironic too, that you know the guy who built the prisons would get captured at the end.
Yeah. And, I'm sure they never put him in a pick. They put him in a Hanoi and probably had him in a regular prison there. But
who were his best friends? Did he have anybody? One or two guys that were his best friends?
A guy named Zeke Zelaitis was a very good friend of his. And, we had a couple, there was another guy, what the hell was that guy's name?
Old Marine buddies, or just aces guys?
Well, one of those, was it Orville Freeman? That was the Secretary of Agriculture.
Sure, I've heard of him, yeah.
He was the best man at one of Tucker's weddings. Tucker told me about it. He said, I'm not sure it was my second or my third. Tucker was that way. He said he was the best man. He was in the Marine Corps with us. and everybody knows. And I don't know how close they were later years.
Okay.
Got into agency or something?
Yeah. When it is.
Did that book Cops get published?
Oh, sure, that's published, but he's working on another one now. He wants to do a book about spies, and he wants to do the same kind of thing, interview them and have them tell little anecdotes about the spy experiences. And most of the guys I talked to said, no, they're not interested. They only get their name in the book. And he says he won't use names. But
how long ago was he around?
Just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
We had the snow. He came up from Florida, so you picked a hell of a week to come to Washington. You had to put a snow the day before he got there. And another foot 2 days after he got here. No, his book Cops that he wrote is sort of like, this guy's through, and he doesn't use any names, he's just a cop to tell him about a case he was on, and he goes through. It's all the way through the whole book, that's what it is.
You know that guy Studs Terkel, you ever hear him?
Studs Terkel.
Yeah, he wrote that book, Working. You know, he does a lot of the interviews.
Mm-hmm.
I read his book and I thought, you know, that'd be a good way to go about writing a book. Learn a lot about writing by looking at what other people do and thinking about it.
Yeah, now you told me you already wrote one about your father's experience.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, the one I was just telling you about. That that experience
Who'd you use as an agent? Who was your agent? You obviously
didn't
raised
have an agent.
And you got the book published without an agent.
The first publisher I sent it to in America accepted it, and the first publisher I sent it to in Australia accepted it.
And without an agent?
Without an agent.
So you didn't have to pay anybody?
That's right.
So you don't have an agent?
I don't have an agent.
You can try and do this one the same way? Well, you got right. Who's the publisher?
I haven't got a publisher for it yet.
I mean the other book?
Lawrence Hill in Connecticut.
Lawrence Hill?
He's a small publisher. Not big. I did not make a lot of money off
my... Yeah, you told me that.